Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Now, hello and a very good evening to you, and welcome to the Astronomy Show, where we bring you the latest news and discoveries from all corners of the universe. Right here, 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here, you can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie or astronomy.ie or as a podcast, wherever you get your podcast from. And of course, we welcome any queries, comments or questions that you may have of an astronomical nature, of course, and the email is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And you can also text us or WhatsApp us on 087-179-1032. And I'm often asked from time to time, where do we get the intro music? It's from the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon album. And it's one of the track's quality clips, so we just take a little bit from that as well, just in case you are interested. So there we go. Very good evening to you again. And the planets now, starting off with the International Space Station. It is in our evening skies at the moment, from now until the 28th of September. And for some reason, I don't have this evening's time, but you can catch it on NASA.com and a few other sites as well, where you can get to see it. And the best place to look for the space station is Point South. Just go out the back door, front door, side door, whatever it is, look up, and it's at 51 degrees, or 51.6 degrees to be exact, and it's a fine sight to see, and it comes in, it can range from 1 minute up to 6 minutes, depending on what time it is, so easily catchable on the internet, on NASA.com or one of the other sites. Just punch in, what time is the International Space Station over Dublin? Something like that as well. Now, Mercury, unfortunately, it's too close to the sun at the moment. It's today, it's going to come back to the southwest on the 18th at sunset. So you will get to see, because it moves around the back of the sun. Venus is in Leo at the moment. It's in the southeast, and it rises beside a slender crescent moon at the moment. Funny enough, I was out this morning at silly o'clock, about 4 o'clock this morning, and I looked out and there was a very slender moon, which was a pretty sight, and just directly below it was Venus, a nice bright thing to see. And as my eyes got adjusted, I suppose, to the light and the darkness out the back door, I got to see Jupiter as well, and it's shining in the east just before dawn. And they're blazing at the moment around -3.9 for Venus and -2.0, and they're in Cancer and Gemini just at the moment. And this particular gap between the two of them is widening by 1 degree per day to 25 degrees, which happened just a few days ago. And both at the moment are the furthest from the Earth, so don't expect too much in a telescope if you're going to wander through the skies with binoculars or a telescope. Mars, unfortunately, it's very difficult to see from Dublin. It's very low in the west, just after sunset. And not to confuse the orange Mars with its brighter, whiter spica to its left or upper left. And they're about 6 degrees apart just at the moment. So sort of an orangey one and a bright one as well. Saturn, +0.7. It's in the eastern sky just after dark. And it's in the southwestern sky by dawn, so you get a good chance to see it, although it's not terribly bright. It's only +0.7. And it's at opposition, funnily enough, on the 21st of September as well. So that's a nice one to see. And, of course, the blade, or the sort of the rings, if you want to call them, are edge onto us at the moment. So not a great fan of the edge-on ones. I like to see them at the 23 degrees, where you can see the things, but it is fantastic to see and hard to believe that they're only about 10 metres deep at points, maybe plus or minus just a little bit every now and again, but most of them are only 10 metres deep, and we're seeing them from Earth, which is quite a long, long way. The last two, Uranus, magnitude about 5.7, 5.8. It's in Taurus near the Pleiades cluster, and it rises around 10 p.m. It's very, very hard to see, and it's in Taurus, but it's quickly disappearing just below the horizon at the moment, so you're not going to get a chance to see it much over the next little while. Neptune, it's a what they call a telescopic object at 7.8. It lurks 2 degrees north of Saturn, so if you can find Saturn a little bit north of Saturn, you'll find in Pisces. And unfortunately, it's not a naked eye planet either, and it's going to wade through Pisces through 2025 and 2026, so you're going to get a good chance to see them as well, right, as well. So there we go. Just a quick rundown again. Mercury disappearing at 10 to 8. Where are we now? In about 15 minutes' time, it's going to disappear below the horizon, so it's going to be difficult to see. Venus, it rises at 4:20 in the morning. And Mars, it rises and sets in Dublin. Try after sunset. Jupiter, again, it is rising at about 5 to 1 tomorrow morning. Saturn rises at about 10 to 8. Which is roughly the same time as Mercury is going down. Uranus rises at 21:34, which is just 25 to 10, and Neptune rises and sets in Dublin. So, unfortunately, the ones that are extremely difficult to see are Mercury, and the difficult one is also Mars and Neptune as well. And Uranus has average visibility, so a little bit to see up there, which is quite nice when you're out in a completely dark sky after midnight. Now, moonrise and sunset. We've got a little slender moon is what it's called. It's rising tomorrow morning at 1:08, and it sets tomorrow afternoon or evening at 18:28. Its distance from the Earth is 382,092 kilometres from Earth at the moment, and it's currently at about 27.6 percent lit at the moment, so not terribly bright, so it's not doing an awful lot, so it's letting you see a couple of stars in the sky. Sunrise tomorrow morning, 7:02, and sun setting at 19:35, if you're interested. We're losing minus 4.10 minutes a day, and strangely enough, we're going to lose that until the end of the month anyway. I can't give you into October, but there's only one day in there, which is the 25th, where it is 4 minutes and 11 seconds for some reason. And other than that, we're pretty steady at minus 4 minutes and 10 seconds. Less daylight every single day until the end of the month, and it'll probably creep up a little bit just after that. Now, if you're an eclipse hunter like our Ben, good evening to you. 4 eclipses not to miss in 26 to 2029. So, September the 21st, 2025, which is only next week, and we have the next partial solar eclipse. It's quite a nice one to see, and put your just dates in the diary where you can see all that. We have the August 2026 one. We have the first totality in Europe since 1999, and that's been 27 years since the last total solar eclipse in mainland Europe. And on August the 12th, 2026, totality finally graces the European skies once again. As they get closer, we'll let you know exactly where they are, because lots of people like to go as well. So, fantastic sight to see. Ask our Ben. He has been to 4, I think. Yes, he can text me on that one. He's around somewhere, but he'll be back in next week with us. So, August 2027, almost 6.5 minutes of totality. That's a good one. And this is from the southern tip of Spain on August the 2nd, 2027. And there's a band of countries, including Egypt, across that one as well. And totality will last for 6 minutes and 25 seconds. So that's worth going to if you're thinking about that one. July 2028, you have the Great Australian and New Zealand eclipse. So you're going to have to go a little bit up in the air and down the far side, about 24 hours away to see that. So it's July the 22nd, 2028. It crosses Australia from the northwest to the southeast, and the path of totality exciting the country straight through Sydney Harbour. So that's where you want to go. Again, we will let you know exactly where to go and probably where the best viewing vantage points are as well. And then the last one in December 2028 into January 2029. So there's a new year eclipse, and ring in the new year with a total lunar eclipse that can be seen from Europe, Asia, Australia, Africa, northwestern parts of North America as well. So there's just a few for the diary in the coming year. So we'll give you the heads up on those as they get a little bit closer. Now, scientists say there's a 90% chance we could spot an exploding black hole in the next decade. This would completely revolutionize physics and help us rewrite the history of the universe. New research suggests that 90% chance that with the next decade, humanity could use a space or Earth-based telescope to spot an exploding black hole, and such a detection would change our perspective of the universe by proving the existence of primordial black holes. So if you're into black holes, let's keep an eye on that as well. So born 13.8 billion years ago, which was a second after the Big Bang is what they say here. So a good chance that we might get a chance to see an exploding black hole. And as I say, it could reveal some of the origins of matter in the universe. So the physicists, yes, at the University of Massachusetts report the 90% probability that astronomers could witness this exploding black hole. And this would be exciting as far as I'm concerned anyway. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you as well. Now, last week, NASA's Perseverance sent back information that it had possibly found evidence of life on Mars. And to really prove that, we are going to need to haul samples home to find out. And this is what the scientists say. This is potentially a huge discovery by NASA Perseverance Mars rover and will likely remain in scientific limbo for years to come. So on Wednesday the 10th of September, which is not that far back in time, just a couple of days ago, the Perseverance team announced it found possible biosignatures in pieces of a Mars rock called the Chayava Falls that the rover's first study last year, and those intriguing chemical fingerprints, including the iron-containing minerals vivianite and greigite, which Perseverance spotted in the day-rich sediments of a long, dry lake bed. So, what do we believe? What do we understand? What do we trust? What we need to do, I think, is to go to Mars, dig a few samples up from this particular area, and put them under the microscope and decide whether this was actually true or not. Now, I'm also asked from time to time, how would we weigh on different planets? Now, first of all, how do we weigh planets? There's a big burning question for you. To weigh a planet, scientists need to know two things. How long it takes objects to orbit the planet, and how far away those objects are from the planet. And the time it takes from an object to orbit the planet depends on its distance from the planet and the planet's weight. So, if you've got that, fair play. In real life, we can't, of course, pick up a planet and put it on a scale. However, scientists do have ways to figure out how much the planet weighs. So, we do know that the mass of the Earth is... the weight of it is 6 billion trillion tons. And that's a huge big number. So how to put that in perspective, it's 5.970 to the power of 10 to the 24. So I'll go into what we might weigh if we were on different planets or other worlds, you know, that moons of all the planets that we have. And the first one is Mercury, of course, because it's closest to the sun. So if you were nice and cuddly, say about 95 kilos on Earth, just to give an example, your weight would be 35.9 kilos on Mercury. If you were on the Moon, your weight would be 15.8 kilos. So this is why when you see astronauts jumping around the Moon, they tend to bounce quite high. And only if you were 95 down here on Earth, you're only 15.8. So it's a fifth or a sixth if you're on Jupiter, because it's much, much bigger, about 232 times the size of the Earth. 240.2 kilos is what you would weigh. If you were on Uranus, your weight would be 84.5 kilos. And if you were on Pluto, is it a planet or is it not? That's the question. So your weight would be only 6.4 kilos. And if you were on Jupiter's moon Europa, you would be 17.4 kilos. Your weight on Io would be much the same. And what else have we got here? We have the sun. Now, this is a shocker. One for the diet books. It would weigh 2,571.8 kilos. And if you were in a white dwarf star, if you were close to one of those, 123,500,000 kilos. So there we go. So just to give you an idea of what we weigh, and I'm asked that quite often for some reason. I don't know why, but there you are. And we do it from time to time, which is good fun as well. We just go to the notice board just quickly. And of course, you are tuned to the Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here until 8. I do hope you stick around till then. This Saturday the 20th, the Starbecue 2025 in Roundwood, County Wicklow, run of course always by Astronomy Ireland. And you can book now. You want to hurry up, I suppose, at this stage, because it could be full. You just don't know. And the address is astronomy.ie/SBQ. Or you can email admin@astronomy.ie. So you get to see quite a lot of stuff through the biggest telescopes in Ireland, and some amazing sights and star clusters and Saturn, Jupiter, galaxies, nebulae, and so much, much more. And of course, there's a bit of food thrown in as well, which is quite important as well. So the biggest star party takes place, as I say again, this Saturday coming. So you can get to astronomy.ie/SBQ 25 to be exact. So just keep an eye out for that one if you want to go at this stage. I'm not sure what the positions are with tickets at this stage, but I'm sure you could probably sneak in the back door somehow if you pay enough money and all that sort of stuff. So we'll see. Now, one of the pieces of news that I wanted to go for this evening is we're often threatened by asteroids, and trying to get rid of them now is to send a ship of some sort up so that they deflect them away from Earth here in particular. Not so much worried about the larger planets or anything else like that. So selecting a point of impact for a kinetic deflection mission is not trivial. So if we want to send something up to nudge it and put it away from the orbit, the most important thing is to make sure that it doesn't nudge it worse in our direction. And so selecting the point of impact for this deflection mission, according to the research, it's unveiled at the EPSC DPS 2025. This is a joint meeting in Helsinki. And striking the wrong location could nudge a hazardous asteroid through gravitational keyholes and set up a future Earth encounter. So that's the worry that they have, but I think with all the calculations that they can do, they will do that. They probably will have enough time to reinvent another spacecraft to go up and hit it, a nudge or a rocket of some sort, or a nuclear reaction of some sort. So it is a big worry, and some of these asteroids heading our way are quite large. Yeah. So there we go. So can we safely deflect the killer asteroid without making it worse? That's the big question, and it's something that will come up as we get closer and closer to dates of asteroids getting closer right here to Earth. Now, on this day in space, September the 11th, well, I should say a few days back, 1985, there was a thing called the ICE, and I love these things, these acronyms, International Cometary Explorer. And it completed its first comet flyby, and it became the first spacecraft to fly by a comet. And the program's purpose was to study space weather, or the interaction between Earth's magnetic field and the solar wind. And it, after completing its original mission, the spacecraft did maneuver to steer towards the comet Giacobini's inner. It flew straight through the comet's plasma tail, but it didn't stop there. 6 months later, it flew through the tail of Halley's Comet too. So it's been doing weird stuff and been quite active over its year since its launch way back in 1985. Seems like only yesterday. Now, the Chinese astronauts, they're expanding their science research on orbiting space station that they have up there. The Shenzhou 20, Chengdong, Chengzhongri and Wangji are pushing forward the wide-ranging scientific experiments and technology tests aboard China's space station, advancing knowledge across multiple research domains. So don't often hear an awful lot about what's going on the space station from China, but every now and again they go in and they do a bit of hoovering and tidying and cleaning, and it's immaculate inside compared to the International Space Station, where everything's stuck to the wall with Velcro and things. So the human factor technology studies is one of the things that they do, and the crew analysed operational forces such as the push-pull and rotational movements in microgravity compared to the terrestrial conditions down here on Earth. So always experiments going on. News now of the SpaceX team. They launched the cargo freighter to the ISS on September the 14th. And this was the latest in a series of cargo freighter missions to the International Space Station just on Sunday evening from Florida's Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. The Northrop Grumman NG-23 Cygnus XL was launched at 6:11 p.m. EDT. It's Eastern European, so I'd probably think it's about 5 hours or so. So it was into the night with us. The mission hauled 11,000 pounds or about 5,500 kilos of cargo, carrying materials to produce semiconductor crystals in space and equipment to develop improvements for cryogenic fuel tanks, which is be a good experiment to have because it's nice and neat and tidy and small. The spacecraft also will deliver a specialized UV light system to prevent the growth of microbe communities that form in the water systems. And these ones are supplied to produce pharmaceutical crystals that could treat cancer and other diseases as well. So every time somebody goes to the ISS, the Chinese station as well, there are thousands of experiments that are done every single day. So it's not just a day in the or walk in the park, as we would call it. So, and it's something just to keep and just keeping an eye on the text line. Is and Liam and Lucan. Good evening to you. Thank you for tuning our way. Good stuff. And of course, you're tuned to the Astronomy Show right here, 103.2 Dublin City FM. And what else have we got? As usual, we have tons of stuff. With the EXO launch, it's to deliver 59 satellites on record Transport 15 mission. And the rideshare flight with SpaceX. I mean, these are all the things that they go up with as well. And they are scheduled to launch no earlier than November 2025. So the EXO launch, which is probably a name that we don't hear that often, it's the largest to date. It spans more than 30 customers across 16 countries, underscoring the company's role as a premier launch service provider with a proven record of reliability. So Transporter 15 highlights EXO launch's expanding market reach with payloads from the United States, United Kingdom, Germany, France, Finland, Lithuania, Belgium, Italy, Spain, Greece, Poland, South Korea, Taiwan, Turkey, Bulgaria, and the United States Arab Emirates, just to mention a few over as many countries as they are to get into the launch. So keep an eye out for EXO launch. Now, did we know, and we've gone into this, Ben and myself, the odd time, that Earth may have at least 6 mini-moons at any given time, and where do they come from, is the question. And we, of course, know about the big moon that we have, but we don't know an awful lot about the mini moons. It's incredible that modern telescopic surveys have the ability now to detect such small objects up to millions of kilometers away, heading towards the moon and around to get a little jetpack thrust around. And half a dozen fragments, they reckon, of the moon may briefly orbit the Earth at any given time. before moving on to circle the sun. This is from the new research, but the mini moon's small size and quick pace makes them extremely challenging to spot. And when objects collide with the moon, they send out a shower of material. This is what happens in hell. I would imagine that they call them mini moons because they're certainly not big. They're only little football-y sized things. And sometimes they may be a large chunk. Most are fast moving and smaller than about 2 meters in diameter. So they are quite large, some of them. The bulk of lunar materials fall into orbit around the more gravitationally attractive sun. And then it may get trapped and burnt up, but some of the debris occasionally gets pulled back into orbit around Earth before returning to circle the sun again. So this takes quite a long, long time to get this to go. But it's an interesting topic and one that I'm going to push a little bit my little brain cells and things into, have a little bit more look in detail to see what size they are, have they got names, which is more to the point, where they are at the moment, and are they actually pieces of the moon, etc. So, of course, we have Elon Musk's Tesla up there at the moment. It's orbiting Mars at the moment. What sort of state that is in, I don't know. We don't often hear an awful lot about it, but I would imagine the paintwork is a bit radiated. The poor old spaceman inside with his arm out the window. I don't know if many of you have seen that, but he's still bombing around the universe at the moment and around Mars and back. So it's quite interesting. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. And hopefully we'll be able to find out with a bit of Googling. And there we go. So now, AI is a big thing at the moment. Artificial super astronauts. How AI and robotics could help humanity settle on Mars. So, artificial astronauts, that's AA, could fly as actual crew members on human missions to Mars and elsewhere in space. This rugged space-rated artificial humans offer great advantages. For example, they would not require large amounts of consumables needed to support humans. They could also perform spacewalks without a life support system. And while not everyone will agree on the predicted rate of development of robotics, the artificial intelligence, AI, this is the idea that progress will be fast. Now, this is a remarkable subject to study. And I must say, I'm not hugely interested in it. I sort of draw the line at automatic cars driving on their own. So I don't know whether I'd venture out in one of those. So as we enter the age of AI, robotics and AI are making studies and strides to achieve the first artificial human. So let's see what happens there exactly. And on this day, it's one of these headed on this day from September the 10th, 2011, NASA's Grail mission launches to the moon. And it launched its mission to the moon, which stands for the Gravity Recovery and Interior Laboratory, which was sent to the moon to map its gravitational field. So always interesting to see and go back in time when things have been launched, and just to keep an eye on that, just for memory, because a lot of us were around for all of that as well. Anyway, that is it. Time marches on as fast as it can, as usual. Right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. The email address for comments and questions, astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Ben will be back, of course, next week. Two of us will be here. And from now on, it'll be music all the way until 2 a.m. right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Next, Dublin's Greatest Hits from 10 till midnight, Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood. Always worth a listen. And midnight after hours with Dave Barry, his jazz, blues, soul until 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. Please join myself at the same time with Ben, 7:30 next week, when we will be back with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thanks for listening. Say goodnight, John. Good night, John. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.